Well, David Temperley, so glad you're here to talk about your music and that you're at the piano to share some music with us. It's
my pleasure.
For me, it's a funny thing being in such a musical town, so many different threads of music making, that even if you're pretty connected and go out to hear a lot of music, at least for me, you can suddenly discover you've been missing something, which is what happened to me when I went to an Eastman at Washington Square lunchtime concert January of 2019, so earlier this year, and heard the premiere of your clarinet sonata with Andy Brown playing clarinet and you playing the piano. So it was really surprising and wonderful music to hear, and I've had a chance to hear some recordings since then. So I've just wanted the chance to talk about your music, to hear some of it, and to have you share some insights on what inspires what you do.
Sure.
So, yeah. So to start with, at least, of the music I've heard of yours, of chamber music, it's abstract in a way. It's not necessarily got a story or a thing that, you know, it's about this, but it's also very accessible and very pleasant to listen to and inspired. So I was wondering if you could talk a bit about your musical language and what inspires you.
Yeah. Well, my musical language, I think of it as taking classical and romantic music as a starting point and building from there, not in kind of a ironic way or a postmodern way, as a lot of contemporary composers do, but really buying into the whole style and really diving into that style. And again, using that as kind of a starting point, and then I innovate from there and do things that I think are original, but sort of gently pushing at the boundaries of the style rather than just, you know, completely rejecting it or taking it apart. And I think that's a big part of what I'm doing in my composing. But then I also bring in other influences. There's a lot of influence of popular music, rock, and then occasional hints of, you know, Stravinsky and other 20th century composers. But I guess that's sort of a brief summary of what I see myself doing in my music.
I think one of your descriptions online was that although it's rooted in this 18th and 19th century styles, it was something that couldn't have been written at that time.
I think that's right. Partly because I think every composer is different, you know, and we all have our own personalities and we all write unique music. But also, as I said, there are influences in of rock and other things that no one would ever have dreamt of in the 19th century.
And perhaps we can get into some of where these musical threads came into your life. But I know that you brought some music. So perhaps actually before we talk more about it, we could just hear one of your piano pieces.
Sure. Yeah, I'm going to play a prelude. I've written several dozen preludes over the years, and recently I put together a set of 24 of them, naturally one in every major and minor key, just like Bach and Chopin did. And they're all very short pieces, 1 to 2 minutes each. So here's my prelude number 3. Thank you.
It's so lovely. Thank you.
Thank you.
So with this piece or with your preludes, as you said, there's one in each key, but there are other ideas behind them. Could you explain some of what you're getting at here?
Yeah. So, each piece has its own texture. And in this piece, as you probably heard, there's a constant flow of 16th notes, rather slow. Going through the whole piece. But some of those notes are part of the melody and others are really more accompaniment. So and then there are accompaniment notes filling in the gaps. And there's nothing unusual about that or new. I mean, Bach was doing that, 200 years ago in his cello suites. But in this case, the melody is very syncopated. A lot of notes on the off beats, and that's not something that Bach would have written. So that's an example of how I bring in sort of popular elements, modern popular elements, to what's really a classical context. And I could play another very short piece. Oh, I'm sorry. What were you?
Oh no, go ahead. Yeah.
That just illustrates some other aspects of how I kind of blend the classical and popular. Here's another one of my preludes. So that one, very different from the first one, obviously. And there's not too much classical about that one. It does have a kind of a fairly traditional ABA form that you see in a lot of short classical pieces. But the rock influence is stronger there. In this case, the rock influence even comes into the harmony. So the harmonic progression, that progression is much more typical of rock than classical music. And I also use that sharp four scale degree. It's a very bluesy note, and that's something that you see a lot in rock music and not very much in classical music used in that way.
So you are, in addition to a composer and a pianist, a music theorist and a cognitive scientist, someone who looks at the ways that music and language works. But I'm actually just curious about your own musical background going way back. Was rock first for you or classical? How did this all get started for you?
Yeah, I guess I'd have to say classical was first. My father's a musicologist and an amateur pianist, a very good amateur pianist, and he used to play a lot of chamber music at home. He had a good friend who was a violinist. They played violin piano sonatas all the time and other chamber music. And so classical music was just a part of my life growing up, and it always seemed like a living thing, It was something that people just did for fun, and people made music just for fun. And so that was a big part of my early musical experience. And then I started listening to rock music around the age of 12 or so, because all the other kids were doing it. And it seemed like I had to do it to be cool. But I pretty soon started getting interested in that music just on its own terms. And that became a lifelong passion for me as well.
And when you started composing, did you know that these elements of rock would be part of classical compositions for you right away, or did that come with time?
I think from my very earliest compositions, that was kind of that was a big part of what I was doing, fusing classical and rock. Although I should say that My compositions almost always start with an idea that just comes into my head. It's not like I sit down and say, okay, I'm going to write a piece that does this or that. It's I'm in the shower, or I'm driving to work, or I'm, you know, doing the dishes or whatever, and something will just come into my head that I really like, and that will be the motivation to write a piece. And then as I start to work out the details of it, then more sort of deliberate, conscious considerations come into play. But it starts out with something that just pops into my head.
And you studied to be a composer for a while, but at some point your path diverged from that. Could you explain?
That's right. Well, I had a very long and winding path. I was a history major in college, and then I moved to New York City to seek my fortune as an accompanist. And I spent several years playing piano for dance and theater. And that was actually, you know, they say everything happens for a reason, and I'm not really superstitious about that, but it really seems, in a sense, that different parts of my background have been useful in ways that I didn't expect. So when I was playing for dance classes, I played for a lot of ballet classes. And in ballet, they really want you to play very pretty classical-sounding music, and it's all got to be 16-measure chunks, very rhythmically square chunks. And I was doing this for a while, 15 hours a week, and I very quickly got bored of playing existing music, and I decided at one point that I was just going to do nothing but improvise. And so that gave me the task of, okay, you got to play something classical sounding that's 32 measures long. How are you going to make it interesting? And that forced me to really, I think, well, in the first place, to get a very solid understanding of the classical style, but also find ways of varying it and make it interesting that were still within the bounds of the style. And I think that's been a big influence on my later music. Although once I started composing, it was nice that I didn't always have to write in 32-measure chunks.
So at that point where you were playing for dance classes and improvising or coming up with these pieces, had you thought of yourself as a composer already or not yet?
I sort of did. I mean, I was not at all realistic in college or my early 20s. I wasn't at all realistic about what I was going to do with my life. But as I said, I worked as an accompanist for a few years, and then it was fun, but I decided I didn't want to do that for the rest of my life. And so I decided to go back to grad school in composition at Columbia. And that was an interesting experience. And I was already writing, my style had developed, and I was already writing the kind of music that I'm still writing now, the sort of mixture of classical and rock. And that didn't go over very well at Columbia, and that's not at all the kinds of music that people were writing there. And in the serious music world generally, I encountered quite a lot of resistance and to the sort of music that I was writing, and it didn't seem like that was going to be a very fruitful career path for me to just try to be an academic composer. So I switched into music theory, and I ended up getting my doctorate in music theory.
And could you explain a bit more about just what was going on in terms of composition then? I mean, yeah. At least now we're very used to, I think, that people write in all different styles, whether electric, acoustic, experimental,
that's right,
popular. There's so much cross-pollination, which had started happening earlier, but I guess even at the time you were there, was that the 80s, 90s?
That's right, early 90s. Well, there was a lot of diversity at Columbia as well, certainly, but no one was doing anything very much like what I was doing. There were some teachers and some other students who were somewhat enthusiastic about it, but I think they all thought I was kind of weird, and I was. I mean, in that context.
Well, I think maybe people outside of music aren't as familiar with the notion that that academic composing was supposed to sort of go a certain direction or face some sort of certain school or one of several schools.
Yeah, that's right. Or at least academic composition places a lot of importance on innovation and novelty, and you have to be able to show that you're pushing the boundaries in some really significant, demonstrable way. And it's harder to make a case for that in my music. As I said, I think there are original things about my music, but they're rather subtle. You know, I might use a progression in a different way than classical composers did, or do something a little different with form or phrase structure, things like that. But it's not something that I can point to as being a radical innovation.
And then with theory, it seems that that's a lot about understanding how music works in different ways, rhythm, the meter, choices of notes in what I've seen of some of your work, systems and sort of languages of music. And so how did that start to influence, I guess, was being someone who wrote music, did that influence how you looked at other people's music as you analyzed it?
Well, the relationship between my theory and my composing is it's complex. And as I said, my composing tends to start with ideas that just come to me. It doesn't start with well-worked out plans. And so it's not like I'm, you know, writing a theory paper and I think, wow, that's a cool theoretical idea. I think I'll use that idea to write a piece. But I do think there's got to be some influence between the two. And actually, I'm sure there is, because sometimes actually in my theoretical work, I'll stumble across some feature of classical period music, say, that I think is really interesting. And then I'll realize that I was already doing that in my own music, you know, 20 years earlier. That definitely happened in one case. And I'm sure that ideas that I'm thinking about in my theoretical work, I'm sure those seep into my composing as well.
And that is, some of your theoretical work relates to the growing body of people who are looking at rock music and popular music in very serious musical terms, and in ways that the people who sometimes wrote the songs may not have thought of it, but it is evidenced in their work. You know,
That's right. Well, my third book, The Musical Language of Rock, just came out last year, and that's, as the title suggests, it's really a theoretical study of rock music, and I talk about harmony and melody and phrase structure and rhythm and form and all the things we talk about in music theory. And there hasn't been a lot of theory of rock. There's been a lot of analyses, but there isn't sort of a consensus about the basic principles of how the style works the way there is in classical music. And so I was trying to kind of contribute to that issue. And it's true that I think most rock musicians, songwriters don't have a ton of theoretical background. Many of them don't have any. But I do think that the things I talk about in that book and that other rock theorists have talked about are things that might be going on in their minds at an unconscious level.
And I like in one of your compositions that you gave me a recording of, your second cello sonata, it's one with a number of rock influences. I was especially drawn to the sort of rock ballad feel of the slow movement of that cello sonata. I was wondering if you could describe a little bit of what went into that. What were some of the ideas you were working with there?
I can't remember much about what I was thinking when I wrote it, but it is sort of an unusual movement in a couple of respects. It's in a very unusual time signature, 27/16, and that means basically it's got threes grouped in threes grouped in threes. So it starts like this. there's a very fast three going on, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. But those threes are grouped in threes, 1, 2, 3, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. So up to that point, it's sort of like a country waltz or maybe a jazz waltz. But then those larger threes are grouped into still larger threes, 1, 2, 3, 2, 2, 3, 3, 2, 3. And so that's, I think, what makes it a little unusual. But apart from that, it really is, as you say, it kind of feels like a pop ballad, and it has a lot in common with that. It's a very pop music-y form, kind of an AABA form that you see a lot in pop music. And it's really just supposed to be kind of a breather, a lyrical, calm interlude between the first and third movements that are both very sort of agitated and stormy.
Which that also then fits very well into a classical tradition, even though
it's... That's true. Yeah. That's quite true, yeah.
We have a few other of your recordings that I'm so glad you shared with us. One of them, which is a quintet that involves electric guitar. So was that a big step for you, adding the electric guitar into the classical world?
Yeah, it was. It was. And yeah, that's a piece that I wrote actually in grad school in the mid-90s and then revised it a bit a few years ago. And it was performed by some terrific Eastman students just a few years ago. And yeah, that piece was a lot of fun to write. It has my trademark mixture of classical and rock elements in the harmony and the rhythm and everything else, but then this mixture of rock and classical instruments as well. It begins like this. Of course, I'm just playing it on the piano, but the guitar starts. Very sustained sounds, it's kind of a power chord sound, the guitar and the bass together. And that's also a very rock-like riff. Minor pentatonic, which is characteristic of rock. And then the strings come in. Picking up that idea, but in a much more classical way. But then that last chord of the phrase kind of mixes rock and harmony, or in classical harmony together, yeah.
Did you ever play in a rock band?
I did in high school, but we never went anywhere.
So what was, just out of curiosity, I mean, rock is, as you've even written about, is a broad group of styles and genres that we kind of put under that umbrella. What were the bands that were in your ears, whether when you were first starting out playing in that high school band or over the years, that have sort of stuck with you?
Well, when I was a kid, I listened to a top 40 AM station, WLS in Chicago. And I listened to that all the way through high school, when most of my friends had graduated to, you know, FM stations or more cooler stations. But the thing about WLS was it really played a wonderful range of music, from Elvis to the Supremes to the Rolling Stones to James Taylor to disco to Led Zeppelin. And this very broad range of 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s popular music. And I think all that music has, some of those songs I heard hundreds of times, and because that's how much I listen to the radio. And that music has really stayed with me, and I love all of that music. I love Motown. I love Led Zeppelin. I love some of that 70s soft rock. And I think bits and pieces of all of that music have crept into my composing.
And I know you have young kids. Are you what are they listening to? And are you starting to hear that as well?
My daughter's 14. She listens mostly to top 40. And that's a good thing for me, because I like to try to keep a little bit on top of what's going on in popular music these days. I don't know if it's really influencing my composing. I'm not sure that it is, but it's very interesting to see what's happening in pop music these days, because in some ways it seems like very little has changed since the, you know, I hear some songs that could practically have been written in 1980, but then other things are so different. The timbres that they use these days, and I think there's much more influence on lyrics, and the lyrics are really much better than they were in the old days. I mean, much more, there's a lot of wit and craft and cleverness and layers of meaning in the lyrics. And I think they're much more of a focus of attention than they were in a lot of the older popular music.
And I want to take a brief aside just to say, can I get you a glass of water? I should have offered that.
No,
I'm
fine.
You're fine? Okay, good.
And my son doesn't listen to much music. He's more interested in video games.
So in terms of your sort of progression personally, musically, we left off with that story a little bit, that you'd left composition as a study and gone into studying theory, which you then very successfully have gone on to publish many articles, came here to Rochester as a professor to teach theory now almost 20 years ago, around 2000?
That's right. Yeah, and for a number of years, I was just focused on building my career as a theorist and getting tenure and all that sort of thing. And I composed very little in the 2000s. I barely composed at all, really, for 12 years or so. And then once I started to feel a bit more secure in my career and felt that I could do what I wanted, I got back into composing. And that was kind of interesting, getting back into it after so long. And I was pleased to find that some of my old compositions that I'd written in the 90s still seemed very good to me. Not all of them. There were some that I didn't like much anymore, but there were some that I still liked, and I was kind of pleased to find that my style hadn't changed and that I still sort of wanted to write the same kind of music that I had been writing in the old days. And whether that means I'm sort of stubborn and incapable of evolving or have a very constant aesthetic vision, I don't
we'll
know. You could
one.
Look at it. You could look at it in both ways. But whatever the case, my style has been pretty constant through all of those changes.
And with writing your piano pieces, whether the preludes or the rhythmic studies that I've heard on your website, you probably know yourself very well as a pianist. When you're writing these other things, a violin sonata or a viola or a cello sonata, do you have the performer in mind, or how does that sort of work as you approach other instruments and people?
Sometimes I have the performer in mind. Not usually. And it's true. I mean, I'm a pianist, so that's the instrument that I know best. But I did play the violin for a few years as a child, so I feel I have a pretty good feel for stringed instruments. Other instruments, it's been more of a challenge getting into them and starting to feel comfortable writing for them. And I've never really written anything for orchestra. I started a set of orchestral pieces when I was in grad school, but never finished it. And I don't feel as drawn to the orchestral medium. It's partly because, as I said, I grew up with chamber music, and that was such a big part of my childhood. And so much of the music that I love is chamber music. And so that's what I feel drawn to. And I've enjoyed very much in the last few years being involved with the Society for Chamber Music in Rochester. I'm on their board. And that's, I think, a very vital and important force for keeping chamber music alive in Rochester.
And of the piece that I first heard of yours was the Clarinet Sonata, which I mentioned earlier. And that was a premiere. So that's a recent composition, not so from this side of your sort of time off from composing, right?
Yes.
So what did you find different as you were writing that?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, there are certain things that the clarinet does just extremely well and naturally and beautifully, like, you know, arpeggios over a big range and things like that. And the clarinet just has a certain sound that seems appropriate for certain melodies. It's difficult to put into words, but I mean, there's the melody of the second movement. I think that came to me as a clarinet melody, and it just seems right for that instrument in a way that I can't really explain.
And then another part of your music making are the songs that you write and perform. I know they've been heard in some performances at Fringe Fest, I think at Java's and some other places. Do you write lyrics as well, or can you talk a little bit about that side, which, although you have some of similar musical ideas, is a different context than a chamber music concert?
Yeah, that's right. Songwriting is something that I've dabbled in since I was in college, and I do write my own lyrics. And the style of my songs is really rather similar to my instrumental music. It's you could call it classically influenced pop. And so a lot of people say it sounds like musical theater songs, although I don't intend it as such, but it has the same sort of mixture of classical and pop elements that a lot of musical theater has.
And then you have the lyrics, but also on a musical level, you're working with this other instrument, which is the human voice.
Yeah. Yeah, I write lyrics, I guess, just because I always start with a melody, or almost always, and then I write lyrics just because a song has to have lyrics and someone's got to write them. And I don't regard myself as the greatest lyricist, but and I guess my lyrics are sort of musical theatery as well, in that they're kind of... they don't have a lot of the sort of poetic imagery that a lot of pop lyrics have. They're more sort of down to earth.
I was just wondering also about sort of whether the challenge or also the joy of writing for then the voice in terms of sound.
Yeah. Well, the voice, again, there are certain things that voices do really well and other things that are more difficult for them. And I guess that's not something that I think about consciously, but I'm sure it does affect my writing. And again, usually when a melody comes to me, it comes to me with a certain instrumental associations. Like sometimes a melody will pop into my head and I know right away that's a song. And in other cases, it seems more like a violin melody or a piano melody.
And what are you working on now in terms of compositions?
What am I working on now? I've gotten interested in writing piano sonatas. I guess I think of a piano sonata as three or four short pieces that are all very closely connected in some way. And that's been kind of fruitful for me, because I'll write one movement and then that will really suggest to me that something specific is needed for another movement. And that will kind of get me going on them.
Since you do perform sometimes on your own or other times with other musicians or you're playing your pieces, is it something sort of funny to have the performer hat and the composer hat, or, you know, to sort of step back from it and look at what you're doing?
Yeah. Well, I'm not a concert level pianist, and some of the piano music that I write is very difficult. And like the sonata that I'm working on right now is really beyond my ability to play, to play really well. But there are lots of great pianists out there, and there's plenty at Eastman. And often these really good pianists like virtuosic music that shows what they can do. So I do have a good sense of rhythm, and which is needed because some of my music is rhythmically quite complex, although I think I can also tend to play a little bit metronomically and a little bit the rhythmic drive in my playing can sometimes be a little bit too intense. But since a lot of my music is very syncopated, I think it's appropriate for it to be played with a pretty strict tempo as opposed to, you know, a Chopin nocturne or something, or a Schubert, which has a simple rhythm, and you can take a lot of liberties with the rhythm without the listener losing the beat. With my music, if you played it with a lot of rubato, it would just become sort of a rhythmic jumble.
And as we've alluded to a few times, you've been here for close to 20 years in Rochester, part of this community as a teacher of theory and researcher at Eastman and working with students, but also part of a community with your compositions and performing. Do you have any sort of favorite stories or memories from sort of your time working on your music here?
Well, it's been wonderful being at Eastman, just in general. And even though I'm a theorist there, that's my day job. Everyone there, from Dean Rossi on down, has been very supportive. And just the idea that even though I'm on the academic faculty, it's very natural and very appropriate for me to perform and compose and have things performed at Eastman. And I know that that's not always the case at music schools. And at some music schools, if you're on the academic faculty, that's all you're supposed to do, and you're not really supposed to be doing anything else. I feel very fortunate being at Eastman in that way.
So glad to get some time discussing your music with you, which I've enjoyed hearing both in concert and recording, and looking forward to hearing more of it. So again, just thank you very much.
Thank you.